Okay, welcome to the show.
Yes.
I'm sitting here together with Dana. Dana, you are a dentist in Düsseldorf and you have a lot of experience about with MEH. How did you gather this experience?
That's right. So I gathered my experience regarding MEH during the past years because of the rising prevalence. We have a lot of children infected with MEH, and through my cooperation with GC for the clinical research part, cooperating with Professor Kremer from the University of Gießen, we adapted some of the treatment protocols, and this was very helpful for our daily practice. And that's why over time we implemented these protocols and products from GC, which helps us and the children who suffer from MEH.
And you even introduced this in your daily practice, that you have dedicated afternoon just for MEH.
Yes.
What's your typical protocol for the typical MEH patient who's coming to your office?
Well, it's usually the parents come together, because it's also you need to advise to the parents. There's a lot of questioning about the diseases. They want to understand what is MEH, how did it occur, what did they do wrong. The parents, of course, they are worrying, did they miss something? So it is really about talking and then asking. We do have a questionnaire, so what has been any incidences during pregnancy, so if there have been any medications, since it's still not known where the etiology from MEH is connected to.
But do you have a guess what's, from your experience, what's probably the one of the factors? Do you have a guess there?
There are some parameters which are in discussion. One is BPA, so endocrinological induced diseases. They are linked to BPA, bisphenol A, or polycarbonates. So the research part is looking into that. Are there any correlations between the incidence of MEH and exposure to BPAs during early childhood? So, because we know the first molar is very often infected, so there needs to be questioned, is it something that the children are exposed between the first and the third year? And secondly, antibiotic treatments, that's always. And then also during pregnancy, are there have been any medications that might have also influenced the amelogenesis of the teeth? So this is discussion.
No, the interesting thing is, I had a talk about with the professor from Greifswald, Professor Spiet, about it, and he of course said, yeah, it's not unknown, but he thinks it's linked to high temperature sicknesses also, that when small children had a high fever, that he also sees that as a prevalent factor, but of course he can't prove it.
Yes.
But the interesting thing, it was a course, and someone, a dentist, with the mother of three children, also said, oh yeah, that could be, because my youngest one had a really high fever and MEH now. So it's very interesting. So product-wise, how do you treat these children? You just told me that you even had some patients who are have problems with eating due to MEH.
Yes. So depending on the treatment need index, either you just have opacities on the teeth. This is also very common, and you can mistake them with white spots or fluorosis. But what is very significant for the MEH children is that they suffer from hypersensitivity. So if you just with the air test, you can see that they suffer from cold, the eating things, nutritions. They are narrowed down in that. And so this is a characteristic that you can measure as clinically for MEH. And what we do is that we seal them, the teeth, if you don't have substance defects. So you seal them with a glazonomer, a high viscose glazonomer, such as the Fuji Triage. This is a very helpful device. And additionally, on top, we recommend for the home use MI Paste Plus or a tooth smooth, so remineralizing agents, and Recaldent works very good. And also on the chair side, we put a layer of MI varnish, so a high fluoride varnish is also very helpful. This is like the initial treatment, and then they are in a life cycle monitoring, so you see, but usually after 24 hours, they don't suffer from hypersensitivities anymore, and this is of course very helpful for the children. And in substance defects, we use glazonomers, hybrid glazonomers, such as Aquia or Aquia Forte or Aquia HT, these work also well for the stabilization phase.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And probably, are these teeth already fully erupted when you see the patients, or usually not?
Not always. So if you see them in the early stage, you may see substance defects in the eruption phase. And then, of course, it is also helpful to use a glazonomer. But in general, I would always advise to use a glazonomer because of the fluoride release, not only because of the circumstances that of the wettability. It's also helping for the hypersensitivity. And then later on, if you want to transit into a resin-based restoration, I would always wait until the hypersensitivity is not there anymore and the defect is stabilized, that there are no other fracture or flaking parts. And then you can also consider about a resin-based, composite-based restoration, or even into a long-term restoration when they are not in development anymore, such as lazy, onlays, inlays, or veneers for the fronties. Mm. If the fronties are also often, you have the incisor hypomineralization, of course, as well.
But it always depends probably on the defects. Mm-hmm. Do you have a different adhesion protocol, or do you still use your standard adhesion protocol for the veneers or for the permanent or more permanent restoration in the posterior?
That's a very good question. We don't know yet how deep the disease goes. So even if you think that it seems to be in a good area where it's not infected anymore, you don't know. You would need to have a histological probe to tell, is the animal still infected or not. But we have, so far, it works very well with the G Premier Bond and the G Stem Link Force. If you place veneers, we did that already for older patients above 20 years who have the incisors infected with incisor hypomineralization. Of course, it's only our clinical data personally that we can say, even after a year or 2 years follow-up, it's still consistent. But data for that is needed. So research is needed, and to say how deep do you need to excavate, how deep do you need to remove the opaque areas, and what luting protocol works best for molar or incisor hypermineralized teeth. That's still outstanding. That's what's needed yet. So.
Actually, sometimes when I talk with dentists about MEH, we are, some tend to make really extreme choices, rather to extract the first molars and then let the orthodontist do the rest. I personally would not like this approach. What's your experience with that?
Yes, I think it's depending on the size of the defect. Of course, you have cases where you see them on a very later point and they most of the molar is already so deeply infected and a root canal treatment is not possible, then you go for the extraction therapy, but it shouldn't be the first choice, of course. But I can personally say from my clinical experience, even deep cavities, but we know it already from Equia or glazonomers in general, are very thankful for the pulp parts, even if you have a caries profunda. It works very well. So even for deep cavities, you can always try first with the glazonomer filling, and if it's not working, the extraction therapy should be really the final choice.
Yeah. For example, the extraction therapy might work in the posterior, but not in the anterior region.
Yeah, of course. So yeah. So what are you, this is a very good question, because what are you doing with the front anterior teeth that is deeply infected? But usually those kids, they come to the dentist, because if you have like a major substance defect, you can always try with the filling. Glazonomers is a little tricky for the front teeth area, so you seal it for a while, and afterwards, if it's stabilized, you still can try a resin-based restoration, and later on, then of course, definite. But the extraction therapy, but because what are the choices afterwards? You always have to provide a solution. You cannot leave them with a gap. And implant therapy before they are 18 or 19, 20 years old is also
actually
not...
Some people even say that we shouldn't do implants under 30 years.
Yes.
So it's real then kind of focused, or the only option would be a bonded bridge.
Yes. for instance.
And that could be a nice option, but it's always poor. Poor situation, or that sad situation of some young person losing a central incisor.
Yeah, it is the issues that we are speaking of a disease in pediatric dentistry that is on the primary, not on the primaries, on the permanentes. So you need to offer always a solution for the parents and for the children. But this is why we also instruct our dental hygienists in the office. They see the children on a frequent basis for the cleansing or just like for the individual prophylaxis and what's very common here in Germany. If they recognize a MIH on an early stage, there are many options how you can help.
But how often does your hygienist recall your MIH patients? Do you have a different protocol for that?
Yes, we do. So they usually come after the first visit, 4 weeks past the first visit, and then we call them in again after 4 weeks. So we monitor and we track, is there a pain relief? Do you see any differences? Usually parents tell us eating habits have changed. So for like ice cream, it's not an issue anymore, or very cold nutrition. Well, that's it. So we see that. Besides then, if they are stabilized, they come just on a frequent basis for the twice yearly checkup.
And let's go back to the posterior, because some people even would say, I think with the stainless steel crowns, one company also has one of them first molars. Do you have any experience with using stainless steel crowns on MIH teeth, or are you rather not suggesting it?
Luckily, we don't see this stage of MIH very often. What's common for us is the stages where you have the opacities and the hypersensitivities or defects, which can be until the dentin part. But so we don't use the stainless steel crowns. Of course, it's depending on the indication, it can be very helpful. And if we have larger defects, we transit them with a glazonoma restoration and then go rather for a ceramic based long term restoration from if they are not in the developing phase anymore. So I don't have like a profound experience in the stainless crowns. But there are alternatives also on silicone base. So I know, or you can even use hybrid ceramics. In a digital workflow, you scan the defect and you can develop a hybrid crown. So because of the stainless screens, the adaptation and the biological widths, it's not always helping. So it's a little critical.
So you can summarize, it always depends on the stage of the person is in, or when we see them for the first time. As long as it's not fully erupted, rather something treatment with eczema, glazonomia fillings. If it doesn't need any treatment, rather the MI moves and very close recalls. As soon as they're fully erupted, you kind of tend to think quite early about some hybrid ceramics or glass ceramics permanent?
When they are at least 18, 19 years old. Okay. So until that, we try to bridge the time with either glazonomers, and the hybrid glazonomers work also on long term or just composite based resin based restorations. But we always say seal to heal, because the sealing is very crucial, and the varnishes are also very important in the treatment of MIH.
I'm kind of surprised that you said 18 because if, for example, some young patients were 15, 16, might be also very concerned about the optical properties of a front tooth. In these cases, you rather work with composite, probably?
Yes. Okay. I would even suggest to wait a little longer, because girls, they still grow after past the 18th year. So when they're around their 20s, it's a good time. But of course, they demand for it. If it's the incisor, they suffer from it. Like white spots, people will say, I don't want to have them any. I don't want to have this defect. But luckily, the new composite systems like Essentia or the Genial composites, you can provide a really nice solution also for that time being.
Thanks a lot for the talk, Diana.
Yeah, thank you.
I think everybody, in cases someone wants to know more about MIH, you have also a webinar online. Is it in German or in English?
It's in, I think it's in German.
Okay, German. Okay, too bad. Just for the German listeners.
But we have an English webinar on the GC eCampus from Falk Spendicke, which is also very helpful.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much. Bye.